Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and our guests this week, Jennifer Bogart, publisher and author, and Angelica Otwell, musician and storyteller. Angelica, you are John's daughter-in-law. What are the most important things you would like our audience to know about John himself?
John has been described as a Renaissance man because he was multi-talented. He was one of the finest miniature furniture makers and woodcarvers in North America. He was a superb model maker. He did lovely pen and ink drawings. He was a photographer who developed his own pictures. And that only tells you about his artistic talent. In the music and dramatic field, he played the guitar, keyboard, drums, and he played with numerous musical groups, including West Bend. He had a fabulous talent for comedy, and he delighted us many times with his rendition of old English music hall songs. But what made him really special was his contributions to the community. He was president of the Warkworth Service Club. He did a ton of volunteering for West Bend. He taught miniature furniture making in Haliburton and Loyalist College. And he taught wood carving in his carving club in Roseneath. And everyone who knew him loved him and really thought highly of him.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure. I've met John, and he was a lovely man. Yeah. Now, John's autobiography paints a detailed picture of his childhood in England before and during the war, and then afterwards while he was doing military service. Did he often speak of that time, and how did these early experiences shape the rest of his life?
We heard quite a lot about his life before he came to Canada, but I think his memories had a kind of bittersweet quality. There is a lot that he missed about England. He actually loved his job as a young detective before he came to Canada, and he probably would have stayed there because he was expecting, actually, to become an inspector. He also loved his time in Japan as part of the occupying forces after the Second World War, because he got to see a very different culture. However, he also saw the devastation of the bomb in Hiroshima, and I think that influenced his decision to come to Canada. When the Suez Crisis broke out, he was really worried about the safety of living in Europe. He and his wife, Audrey, came to Canada to have a safer and a better life for their son, Mike.
Can you tell us how John and his wife, Audrey, came to settle in the little town of Warkworth, of all places, when he comes to Canada? And were they both artists?
Yes, they were. It was kind of funny how they ended up coming to Warkworth. You see, John had been working for a large architectural firm as a project manager in Toronto. And the stress was beginning to affect his health quite seriously. One weekend, he and his wife, Audrey, they just went for a drive to Warkworth to look at some property they'd seen advertised in the paper. Turned out it was on Maiden's Mill, on a hill overlooking a stream, and they fell in love with it. They ended up moving there with no pension, homesteading, and living off of John's income making miniature furniture. Audrey began to make miniature dolls, and she branched out, creating diorama settings for them. She also took up painting, creating gorgeous pictures of flower arrangements. Besides that, they joined numerous musical groups, like West Bend and the Old Festival Singers.
Hmm. Artists indeed. Well, perhaps you could read us one of your favorite pieces from John's autobiography, Angelica.
I actually have two little excerpts. The first one is from his childhood before the Second World War, sometime between the age of maybe 5 and 10 years old. So I quote here, "At these family gatherings, everyone was expected to do some sort of performance. My Uncle Will was a fantastic piano player. In fact, he used to perform in the music hall with another man in the style of Flanders and Swann. At our gatherings, if you were going to do a song, but you did not have the music, all you needed to do was to hum the tune, and lo and behold, Uncle Will played the tune plus all the accompaniments that went with it. When I was 9, a popular entertainer was George Formby. His songs were quite risque, and it was one of his songs, When I'm Cleaning Windows, that I chose to sing in one Christmas. At the time, of course, I was not aware of the subject matter. I think I shocked several aunts by singing it." And just as an aside, I should tell you that that was one of the ones that he used to do for our gatherings, which we really got a kick out of. Now, the second reading here, I've spoken about his artistic and musical talent, but he was also creative in other ways. This excerpt in his book talks about his experience as lighting and stage director in an amateur production in London in his early years, and I quote, "We had some lighting for the stage, but I thought it would be nice if we could control the lights a bit more by dimming them. To do this, I got a 6-inch sewer pipe, about 3 feet long, and plugged it at the bottom with cement and added a metal plate. Next, we had a wood rod with a similar metal plate attached to the end. To each of these plates was attached one of the electric wires. When the pipe was filled with a concentrated solution of salt water and the electricity was on, raising or lowering the wood rod up or down determined how much electricity could pass through the water, causing the lights to dim or brighten. I shudder to think what could have happened. We were all very lucky that no one got electrocuted. The normal supply was 220 volts.
Oh, wow. Well, they were resourceful, if nothing else.
Absolutely.
So did he act as well?
Yes, he acted in the plays, and he and Audrey actually both acted and performed in them, and they made all the sets and painted all the scenery.
Good heavens.
Yeah, it must have been quite a loss when they came to Canada.
Yeah. Is there anything these two didn't do?
Actually, they were not great at technical things. That I was surprised when I read that because John was not a techie. That's why his son, Mike, took over that sphere. He couldn't compete in the artistic field, but he decided to go over the technical field. And a machine that was broken down, he would fix. Computer problems, ask Mike.
Yeah, great. So do you perhaps have one more excerpt to read for us?
Yes, this is excerpt comes from his stay in the occupying forces in Japan after the Second World War. He absolutely loved being in Japan. It was such a different world, and it was his chance to travel and see the world. He even took up judo when he was there. He loved the people. He loved the culture. But he did have a chance to see the devastation in Hiroshima, and I'm going to read that little section here.
Okay.
Our station was 30 miles from Hiroshima, and I went there several times. Mostly, we could get a ride on one of our lorries. But the first time I went, we got a lift on a Japanese vehicle. This was like a three-wheeled motorcycle with an open box in the back. Six of us stood in the back while our Japanese driver steered in front. That was quite a journey, but we made it in one piece. Hiroshima was an amazing sight. To think it was once a big city, but had become a flattened expanse of rubble. One of the buildings still standing was made of stone. Some of the steel support frame was a twisted mess. It takes several hours of fire to create twisted steel, but this all happened in a split second. It was incredible. Even on the stone of the building, you could lift thin layers of stone away. That building had been left as a reminder of what happened and as a memorial to those who died. I suppose a large number of the buildings were made of wood, but they must have been vaporized, as there was no trace of any remains. I picked up a small ceramic vase that must have been near to some glassware, as the side was covered in a thick layer of glass. I wondered at the time how long radiation lasts and if there was any still present in that rubble. This, to me, was a complete eye-opener of what we could expect in another war. Even in this devastation, all around the outskirts, new buildings were being erected. One looked like an Anglican church. In later visits, I saw they had put up a big Tory in the memory of the soldiers killed there.
Food for thought, yeah.
Absolutely.
Wonder how long that does last. Well, thank you very much for reading those for us, Angelica, and for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And sharing your thoughts about John.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to you too, Jennifer, for joining us today and telling us about John Otwell and his autobiography, Journey of an Artist. Now, where can listeners buy this book, Jennifer?
The book is available online at almost all online bookstores. So you can order it through Chapters. You can order it on Amazon. You can go into your local independent bookstore and request it, and they can order it in for you. It's also available as an ebook through almost all ebook stores. So again, Amazon, Kobo, iBooks, wherever your favorite place is to get books.
Okay. For our listeners, Otwell is O-T-T-E-W-I-L-L. And the book, again, is Journey of an Artist. Okay. And listeners, to connect with us, please send your comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to our website, www.wordonthehills.com. At the site, you'll find all our programs archived and available to listen to anywhere and at any time. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us again for another program next week, right here on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.